You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
Hey, this is Meg Riley, and you're here for another episode of The View. Today we have some folks who are leading a gathering of seminarians, Continental Gathering of Seminarians, that we'll be talking about in just a minute. But meanwhile, let's have our regulars introduce ourselves. We're a small but mighty band of regulars today. Tom Shade, you're back.
Yes, I've been in Europe for a couple, for 10 days on a family vacation, and I'm back. Glad to be back. I had a day, last 2 days, where I haven't done anything and have kept very quiet, hardly even answered email, just kind of stretching that time out of being disconnected. But it's a beautiful day here in Ann Arbor, and it's cold, and I have heavy socks and fur-lined slippers on for the first time. So, but it's beautiful. So I'm glad to be back and hi.
Even when you're retired, you have to do reentry, huh?
I haven't had a – this is like the first day off I've had since I've been retired. So, you know, it's retirement for me has been, a fair amount of work. So, so seminarians, you have that to look forward
That's
to.
That's how most retired ministers that I know seem to
approach I know.
Yeah. I'm already counting down to retirement.
You're already counting down
to retirement. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, for a while there, I was saying when I was in the church, I was like, God, I can hardly wait till I'm retired so I can get some work done, where I don't have to go to as many meetings and all that other stuff, and I can actually, you know, do work, write, and think.
Which is what you've been doing. It's been a great, great benefit to many of us.
Thank you.
We'll call it an unpaid ministry.
Let's talk about Bob LaValle.
How's Bob LaValle?
Hello, greetings. I'm Bob LaValle. I'm a third year at Meadville and in Buffalo, New York, where it is suddenly sweater weather. And it's funny how I grew up in Buffalo, left for 30 years, and came back 30 years and came back last year. And it's funny how sweater weather feels more like home than the summer. I guess that says something about Buffalo.
It's cozy. It's cozy weather here in Minnesota. I realized I was being cranky because it's been getting dark at about 7:30. And suddenly yesterday I said, Meg, it's October tomorrow. Of course it's getting dark at 7:30. And it cheered me right up because I love October. But it was so warm through September that I kept thinking, why isn't it still summer? But now it's cooling off. I love this. It's great gardening weather. I'm out there ripping stuff up, and it's fabulous. So we have three guests today that we'll be talking to in a few minutes. We have, I hope I pronounced this right. Steve Jobs would have practiced this. Eileen Wiviot, did I get it? All right. Alex Klingenberg and Shay McKay, and they'll be talking about the seminarians gathering in just a minute. But we wanted to talk about a couple of other things first. I lead with just news that has just really broken my heart this week, and I hope I don't cry. I already cried this morning, but the execution of one of CLF's prison members of CLF's prison members, Kelly, now I'm blocking out her name, Kelly. And, you know, this is a woman who did something heinous. She did not kill her husband, but she arranged for someone else to kill her husband. And she felt horrible about it. She came into full accountability for what she did. She came into full, like, sorrow, trying to make it right, doing everything in her power to make it right with her kids, with other people. She went to seminary. She went to Emory to seminary. Kelly Gissendaner. She went to seminary. She took classes through CLF. She did all the learning that she could. She was, by all accounts, a minister in the prison to inmates and workers alike. And yet the state of Georgia could think of nothing to do but to kill her. And I am heartbroken and angry to live in a culture that doesn't believe in redemption or healing or anything but retribution, but vengeance. I'm ashamed and I'm angry, and I'm deeply sorrowful for her children and the people who knew her personally, who whose children now have neither parent. Who's that helping? So I just want to raise her name again. We had one of our ministers, Cassandra Howe, went to the vigil in Macon, Georgia. It was her due date, pregnancy due date. And I love the image of that new life coming even in that horrible time of killing. Even so, we keep grounded in the hope of the new life and the love and the dream of a government, frankly, that is based in right relationship and accountability and justice instead of vengeance and, frankly, state-sanctioned murder of all kinds of people. So I just wanted to lift that up. It's not super upbeat. It's certainly where those of us at CLF have been dwelling for the last couple of days in this heartbreak. Name that.
Well.
See how much universalism is needed. I mean, that is just pure Calvinism. You're evil. There's nothing you can do about it. God has decreed that you're evil. You must suffer. You know, there's no intervention. There's no healing. There's nothing bigger. There's nothing bigger than punishment.
I was just thinking, I'm glad you went there, Meg, because if there was ever a moment that tells us that theology matters, this is it. You know, and you know, at the core, I think, of probably everyone in this room and most folks watching is a theology that's the possibility of change, the possibility of growth, of redemption. And here's a clear place where the state's theology and our theology is totally at odds.
I'm sorry to hear that. I had not made that connection yet, Meg, that you were in a certain way. Her minister, her pastor, as a member of your congregation, a little different than perhaps someone who has a physical brick-and-mortar church and people they see every week. But
Very different. I mean, I long to be there, you know, with her kids. Our prison, the person who does the most work in our prison ministry is Mandy Goheen, who's down in Montgomery. It's not so far away, but even she couldn't get over there. So we're really glad that Cassandra could be there. And, just grieving that. I mean, why is that different from the person getting killed today in Oklahoma? It's not. It's just that the personal connection makes you know it more personally how just very, very wrong it is.
Mm-hmm. And ministry is a network of personal connections that these, you know, people who are closer are connected to you closer, and that it helps feeling responsible for everybody in the world, that if you can learn to be responsible for this 100, this 200, this 600, this 1,000, in a way that when you lose that you lose something really vital, my experience.
Yeah, even the Pope tried to intervene on her behalf. And interventions were not heard, so
yeah. There
we have it. There we have it. So, Bob, there in Buffalo, you've been doing some good work, I know, similar to work we've been
doing.
We're trying. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, well, folks may have heard of a great organization called Showing Up for Racial Justice, which is folks who identify as white who are interested in having conversations with other white people about how to fight racism. That's the really simple version. It's a loose collective that's a national organization, but their new national director of organizing, I think I have her title right, happens to live and be from Buffalo.
I didn't know that. Dara?
Erin Heaney, yes. So that's really exciting.
What's the name again?
The organizer's name is Erin Heaney. The organization is called Showing Up for Racial Justice.
Okay. Or Surge.
And they have organizers across the country, like our organizers there in Madison, but you're lucky to have someone local. That's really great.
Right. Well, she's busy doing national stuff, so we never see her, or very rarely, but it's nice to know she's here. But we have a bunch of – I suggest checking out the website. The principles are really helpful for this kind of work for white people. So on Tuesday, our basic work so far has been to knock on doors, to go around white neighborhoods, knocking on doors with a stack of Black Lives Matter yard signs and asking folks if they'd be willing to put a yard sign in their lawn. And it is an amazing conversation. This past Tuesday, I did it in a very wealthy neighborhood in the urban center of Buffalo. And I have to say it was pretty dispiriting because I heard, because of the wealth and the privilege, I heard some very articulate explanations about why people were not going to put that sign in their lawn. And we had a couple takers, bless their hearts, but it's hard to stand there and and do that. But you've been doing some of that too, right?
Yeah, I've done it a couple times. And what I'm intrigued by, and I have been for so long, is how do you have a conversation where people actually open minds and transform, as opposed to just barraging people with stuff and then we just go right past each other. And so we did, you know, here in Minnesota, we defeated a homophobic marriage amendment completely by hundreds of thousands of people having conversations about love and marriage. And to do that with this fabulous script that came out of 30 states that had failed to defeat these, and especially out of LA and California, that was just magic almost. Because what it did is elicit cognitive dissonance for people, and they heard themselves talk. And if you could get to an undecided voter, two-thirds of them ended up with you because they heard themselves, and they didn't like what they heard, and they shifted. I've been looking for that with regards to racism for white people, and I feel like it's a much harder conversation. Because what I see it when I go to doors is that everyone, including, you know, and I've now knocked at doors from people who scared me with their violent racism, in my opinion, to people who sat down and said, I think about this all the time, and took a yard sign eagerly. Every one of those people said, I treat everyone the same. So every one of them went to their value of treating everyone the same. And that is their key value around racism. And trying to move people to seeing that that's not what we're talking about, and that the systems of oppression make that impossible, actually, because we're in such a, you know. Anyway, I'm really intrigued by that. And what I've actually come to here with Surge is that's the specific piece I want to work on, is talking. There by now, all these people have been doing these conversations around all kinds of things, including Parisa Parsa, new member of the CLF board, who's now running public conversations. I would really like to figure out how we have a meaningful conversation about race, because I honestly don't feel like the conversations that I've had, anybody has shifted where they start. Mm-hmm. And that
but don't you think there's such huge value, Meg, in just simply, just simply saying, let's have a conversation? Like,
Oh my God, for a white person to show up and say, this is important enough to me that I'm doing this awkward thing, this uncomfortable thing of knocking on your door, that's worth it. Right there.
The other thing is how freaking weird it is to like knock on a stranger's door, stand on their porch, which is totally the most unwelcome thing in the world, and say, let's talk about race. It's almost surreal. It's almost surreal. And I'm sympathetic to these poor people who I see the deer in the headlights look. You know, it's really a place for humor, frankly.
Well, I mean, we have canvassers for everything coming to my house all the time. I don't answer the door a lot of the time. I go, oh, God, there they are. I don't want to hear about the perg or whatever it is I know they're going to try to get money for. So I sympathize with the people who don't answer the door. Here we're targeting the neighborhood of our city council chair, who says, like when we had the spitting and lurking ordinance, she said, the people in my district, they want this ordinance. And so we want to be able to say, well, then why do they have signs up that say Black Lives Matter? You know, you're not representing your district. So, and that was at the recommendation of Minneapolis Black Lives Matter, that we target that specific neighborhood. And so that's where we've been doing it. And what I've been impressed with there, because it's a racially mixed neighborhood, is that people actually answer the door and talk to you. Whatever they think, they actually answer the door and talk to you, which to me is incredible.
I love Minnesota, I tell you.
Well, yeah, but maybe I behave more like not a Minnesotan by hiding often. I mean, in the winter I invite people in and tea and the whole bit because it's so cold. But anyway, Yeah. It's good work. And I noticed that Kathy and Heather Rian Starr have started a surge group out there in Hartford. And I think it is a good organization for white people looking to not have to start from scratch. I've been part of starting the group here. Ashley Haran, another UU minister, has been part of that too. And, you know, it's a good model. It's not a UU thing, which I personally enjoy. That's what I like about it, is it gets you out into the bigger world of, oh, yes, other people who also care about this.
Well, we should have a whole show on this sometime. How about that?
Oh, that's a good idea. We definitely could, because we got people.
We got people around.
Different places, you know, doing it. Yeah.
I didn't think we have a chance to have Philippe Parisa Parsa on the show.
That's true, too. She'd be really fun to have on. Well, let's turn to seminarians. We have with us today the organizers of, I don't know how many of these now. Is it the fourth, fifth, third?
This is the third, yeah.
Third national continental gathering of UU seminarians, which is going to happen in Evanston, Illinois, October 23rd to 25th. And on the screen now we have Eileen Wiviot, and she is doing a lot of that work along with Alex Kingenberg and Shay McKay. Eileen is a seminarian finishing up, I think, at Meadville, or she's been there a while anyway, and also the membership director at the church in Evanston. And Alex is also a Meadville student, and she's the co-chair and in charge of programming. And Shay is a third-year student at Star King and a member of the original core team in 2013. I know I went last year when it was here in Minnesota, and it was really fun to see, and which I understood was smaller than the first year. But it was really fun to meet people from all over. So just start, Eileen, with, like, what are the goals? What do you hope people get out of this?
Well, we're excited to keep this tradition alive because especially in this climate of the changing MFC requirements and getting rid of the RSCC and developing these in-care groups, I think the one thing that I've carried with me through my seminary training has been the importance of our collegial relationships in maintaining a healthy ministry that just has been driven home so strongly. And this is one way to really build those relationships and hopefully have some of those connections be lifelong, ministry-long connections that will grow and deepen. The overall theme of this year's gathering is this topic that you were just talking about, in a sense, beloved conversations, intersectionality, identity, how our individual identities, our cultural, our racial identities, our gender identities, how they intersect within ourselves and with each other, and the challenges and the opportunities that are presented through that. So Mark Hicks and Leslie Takahashi are going to be our theologians in residence, and they'll
fabulous.
Yeah, they'll so lead us. I don't want to talk too much about the programming because that's Alex's.
Well, Alex, tell us. So the structure has been to have a theologian in residence, I'm hearing it is this year than it was last year. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. I wasn't at the one last year, so this is going to be my first Continental Gathering, which is a little bit strange for the planning process, but my background is actually in youth ministry, and so I've helped run a lot of youth conferences. And part of one of my goals is to bring that kind of energy and that worshipful sense of what it feels like to be together for a whole weekend to seminarians, so that when they go out into the world, when we go out into the world, we have that sense of grounding. And in terms of programming, I think that's what we're really working on this year is heart stuff, right? Getting away from this headspace that Unitarian Universalists love to chill out in and move into an embodiment, we're going to work on embodying this year and also just on embracing our own fragility, our own vulnerability, really owning where we are and what's scaring us. And I think having this safe space where, you know, we leave our home congregations and we don't have our own congregations. So we're in this weird void of spiritual connection where we can trust people. And so that's, I know for me, that's one of the things I'm hoping we can pull out from this particular gathering. Mm-hmm. And Mark Hicks is excellent at that, as is Leslie. So we're really just, I'm very excited and honored to have them be our people this year. I think it's going to be kind of an...
Yeah, that's fabulous. How many people do you expect to come?
Where are we at? 33?
We have 33 people registered right now. We're hoping maybe we'll get a few more, but it feels like there's a lot of excitement. And that's across, I think, five or six different seminaries. Most of them are from Meadville, but there's definitely people from Star King and from Earlham, and I'm trying to look at my list of where all the different places are, but there's several different seminaries.
Is it mostly Midwestern? Sorry, Bob, go ahead.
Well, that's a piece I'm really curious about, too, I wish I was going, but I have a conflict with my spiritual direction class, but I'm really curious about, I mean, being at Meadville, it's really easy to feel like, well, we're the only seminarians in the world,
right.
You know, which is a terrible headset, I think, and I'm...
You think Meadville is unique in that way?
It might be the human condition, but I'm really interested in UU seminarians who are... you know, one of three or four seminarians, or even maybe even the one seminarian in their seminary. I met this lovely woman, Angie, I can't remember her last name, who's going to seminary in somewhere near Elkhart, Indiana, an Anabaptist seminary. And I know her experience just from talking to her is so different from ours. And so does Sigas sort of speak to that for folks, or is it a point of connection?
I want to let Shay maybe answer that, because Shay's the only one of us who's been to one of these events. So I'm hoping that it'll be an interesting way for us to connect across the different seminaries. But what was your experience like, Shay?
Yeah, so let me give you some history here, because I was one of the first, there was a group of about nine of us that originally launched this program back in the summer of 2013. It was originally, the conception came from a group of Harvard seminarian students with this exact idea, Bob, that you were talking about. They are a small minority of the Harvard seminarian students, UUs are. And they wanted to find other UU seminarians in the world to connect with. And so they thought they would create this weekend where they would gather all the UU seminarians from North America. And they reached out to a lot of seminaries and said, whoever wants to help with this, please come do this. And there were about nine of us from, I think we represented about five or six different seminaries, Andover Newton, Harvard, Meadville, Star King, United. There are a couple up in Canada that came down. And we worked for a long time, really with no plans for it going any further than just that one gathering. It was just an experiment. But there were a couple key reasons why we were doing that. One was to bring together all the seminarians who are UUs who don't have the community like that Meadville or Star King have, and to offer them that opportunity to just really make collegial relationships and just share experiences with other UUs to give them that community. And then the second was to build not only collegial relationships, but energy going forward as the future of UU ministry, and share our vision and our dreams for that. So that's kind of why this got started in the first place.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, and then somebody who was there said, let's do it again, or was it different people who said, let's do it again?
So we had a group about the same size, I think, of what this year's group is going to be, 30 to 40, maybe a little bit bigger, and at least a dozen different seminaries maybe even up to 15. And the response to the weekend was so positive. We asked them, would you do this again? And everybody was like, please, let's do this every year. And so we then, the planning team then created a proposal system of how a seminary can decide that they want to host it. And then it went from there.
And now I'm betting, because it's seminarians, that you're not using hotels and charging exorbitant fees for this. Do you get financial support from anywhere? And what's it costing seminarians? They're paying their own travel? How's that going?
I can speak to that. I've arranged for home hospitality with members from my congregation. So everybody right now is housed, and if we get more, I should be able to find spots for them. If need be, we would have stayed at the actual church, but it'll be much more comfortable in people's homes. We're trying to keep the cost as low as possible, and people are paying anywhere from $50 to $150 for the registration. That includes everything, food, the housing and everything for the weekend once you get there. Obviously, the biggest expense for many people is getting there, depending on how far they come. There was money that was left over from previous years that had carried over, which was a great, great help. The other money we've gotten is just from registrations, and the UUMA is giving us a little bit of a chunk, and we've just been asking, we've sort of been begging for donations, but...
Have you thought of doing a Faithify campaign for it?
We've thought a lot about that, and it was sort of decided that it would be more work and without a necessary benefit than just directly asking. I mean, to me, the target audience is ministers and churches to say, hey, you remember what it was like to be a seminarian and how great it would be to connect? Would you be willing to give us $100 out of your professional expenses or whatever? So that's what we've been trying.
Yeah, I got an effective letter the other day through Facebook urging me to donate. I'll say it was effective. And
good. I wrote that letter.
Did you? Okay. Well, good. Good. I'm always happy, to be asked for money. That's
everybody good... take a note.
But
yeah, you regret saying that.
Whatever. Actually, I'm genuinely happy, so I don't regret it. I think there's a lot of potential funding sources out there. It's just that, I imagine you just don't have the kind of staff resources to go out there and get the grants and all those kinds of things, being a rapidly turning over organization as a seminarian organization used to be. And back when I was in seminary, we put together this little group called Aspire, and I think we managed to get like 3 issues of a newsletter out. And then everybody moved on, right? They went to their CPE, their internship, and we had no mechanism in place for generating, for cultivating the next round of leaders. So it came and went like spring.
I was just going to say that's one of the things. I have talked to Don Southworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but just we've discussed how can the UUMA help support and keep this going, so that, because that is the case, is that, mm-hmm. We're seminarians, we're like stretched to the maximum in terms mm-hmm. of time and money, and yet this is so important, and so we want to try to think of a way of keeping it sustained and mm-hmm. and maybe through a connection with the UUMA that might be possible.
There was some talk of linking it with the district assemblies too. So it's a little bit more. Someone you're already coming from long distances. We just tack it on to the beginning or the end. And there's obviously benefits to that, but then also we're kind of losing the continental part.
Yeah.
Gathering, which to me is
like, we if I could A couple things. So the funding over the past 3 years has changed. I mean, it just depends on the year and the region of where it's at. The first year we did apply for a couple grants and got them. We've asked the hosting congregations sometimes. And then just like when it was at Harvard, actually, the region there, the UUA region there, gave us some money. So it just kind of depends on who's hosting and where it's at and who can get out there, like you said, to have the energy to, and time to ask. And then, yeah, just to echo what Eileen and Alex were saying, this conversation has been ongoing from the first moment we decided to have a second one of how to transfer leadership and generate leadership and energy for this as seminarians are rotating through. And so working with the UUMA has been an ongoing process. Like Alex said, we were at one point thinking of having regional gatherings rather than a continental, but that sort of defeated the purpose. So this is an ongoing conversation and issue of how to keep it going.
So Tom and I went to seminary back when dinosaurs roamed the earth and there were no Facebook groups. But I know now that seminarians connect a lot through social media. How does that, I mean, first of all, how many people are in the seminarians, the big Facebook group? It's big, right? Like, aren't there several hundred in there? Am I making that up? You guys aren't in it.
Are you talking about the seminary and salon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hundreds. I'm not on that one that much, but I don't know.
I'm checking.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how social media impacts your face-to-face gatherings. If you use that in between, if
346 members.
Certainly, it's been really helpful in terms of planning and getting the word. I mean, that's essentially how we've gotten the word out about CIGAS is through Facebook. So yeah, I mean, I think it has a huge impact. And it's a huge impact on, I mean, people have talked about that at Meadville, just even within our little community that. Being distance learners, that the Facebook groups that we create for classes and things, that's the hallway. That's where we chat and ask questions and how's it going and encourage and all those things.
I wonder if it's it doesn't seem like an accident that two of the three administrators of the UU Seminary Salon are CLF interns. Kimberly and, well, she's a fellow, Kimberly Debus, I'm sorry, and Slim Moon. So I guess they have a penchant for the online thing.
Yeah. I was wondering, especially to Shay, who's been at multiples of these, how do you think, that there's a different evolution of focus and what people are interested in from even 3 years ago, or, you know, 2 years, 3 years ago? Do you think that the concerns of seminarians are shifting in terms of what's interesting to them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I also think that the way CIGAS is structured as a weekend has changed quite a bit over the 3 years. Originally, it was just a let's get together and have fun. We did have some workshops. We did have some worship and things like that. But the first year, it was really just kind of like let's get together and see what happens. Mm-hmm. We had a minister in residence. Tandeka was there with us that year. But last year, it really got more of a focus. Like, this is the focus of the weekend. This is our minister in residence. This is what we are going to shape this around. And I think that seems to be happening even more so this year. So there's like a theme. And then, of course, whatever is relevant at the time, definitely Meadville has chosen quite the relevant topic for this year's theme. So, I mean, the structure has just kind of solidified and focused a little bit more as we go forward with this.
Yeah, my sense in the UU movement as a whole, because of the Black Lives Matter movement, that there's that relevance, you know, kind of relevance is coming to the fore as a primary value. You know, we whatever else we are, we need to be relevant to what the hell's going on. And,
That is, that is crazy talk, Tom.
I've been around long enough to know that there were years that went by that it didn't seem to be very important that we were relevant, that, you know, we were our own little world, you know, you-you-ism, you know, and what we talked about was our stuff, you know. And we had a very internal focus, and now I think we're shifting out of that very internal focus because the world is knocking on our door more insistently than ever before, or at least in my lifetime. And so I'm just wondering, you know, how that's playing up into where seminarians are at. I remember when I was a seminarian, which was back when, you know, all the animals spoke the same mother tongue. And I went to one of those schools where I was, one of two or three. I went to a Southern Methodist University, Perkins School of Theology. So I was surrounded by Southern Methodists from Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana, and a few from Arkansas. You know, so it was a real different world than Harvard Square or Andover Newton or Meadville Lombard at this point. I would have loved to have had this as an opportunity when I was in seminary. But so how does this, drive toward relevance? Is it showing up in this? Is that really a big thing now? Or is this still, because of the nature of the seminary education still, so, you know, you have to be focused on getting into this system, you know, that we have, making it through the MFC, all those things, you know.
Well, let me just say one quick thing, and then I'll pass this on to the current organizers because they can speak to how this year got planned. But just really quickly, one of the conversations we had when planning the original CGUS was, what can we offer seminarians that they're not getting at seminary? So that was kind of one of our focus points was, what are we not getting that we need to be getting to be prepared for ministry in Unitarian Universalism in the future? Uh-huh. And so so that has definitely informed how we've planned these events.
And I would say that's very true still. It's sort of where are we lacking? What's stressing us all out? I mean, this is just in the water right now. We're really concerned with being prepared to go out there and work on racial justice. That's what we're really, really working on that. And so I think it's very relevant. I also think it absolutely speaks to what we are getting that somewhat at Meadville Lombard, but not in this specific way, not in this more targeted way. And I do think that there's a huge move toward that just generally in our movement right now, a move away from let's just talk about what Unitarian Universalism is and into, okay, how do we put our values into practice? How are we going to practice this art of caring about other people instead of just talking to each other, talking to the wider world? So I think it's very relevant and very current.
I lead a online covenant group for seminarians twice a month, and one of the things that comes up there repeatedly or in private emails later or something is everywhere we go, we're being evaluated. We're always in this proving it stage, and a covenant group is a place where you get to just come and be exactly where you are and receive, be ministered to, because as one of you said, you know, you get isolated from your home congregation when you get into seminary, and especially internship. So where do you just get to receive, which is, of course, what all religious professionals struggle with. But is that, I hear you saying, Alex, that with the coming in from the youth experience, that is a big part of what you want to provide, is that community that really receives you right where you are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's, if we could name it, I hope that this is a covenant group, right? I hope that we can create a covenant group from this weekend and moving forward, you know, in our lives. I think practicing spiritual practice now is going to make it easier to practice spiritual practice when we're, you know, practicing ministers. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you had said it before, Alex, that notion of embodying our theology, our ministry, our spirituality, and we are so in our heads throughout the seminary process and jumping through hoops and trying to figure out what's the next thing to write and the next goal to move through. And so, I just think that this is an essential component of it. And the one thing I wanted to mention as well is that we were working on trying to help seminarians fulfill the sexual health competency on the Friday before, or the Friday during the day. CGIS events will start at 5:00 on Friday. We were trying to put an extra workshop in there, but it didn't quite work out. But we are in instead planning some real spiritually renewing and engaging reflective opportunities for that day that will be happening here at the Unitarian Church of Evanston before the events start at 5:00. So anybody that's coming into town early, plan to hang out here at the church and do some writing, do some thinking about MFC. David Petit will be joining us for an hour to answer questions about MFC preparation, and we'll have opportunities for students to give each other their sermon if they're at that point where they've prepared the sermon for the MFC, or answering questions, or those kinds of things, as well as things that have nothing to do with the MFC and just personal renewal. So,
speaking of which, the MFC is meeting right now, and we neglected to wish everybody well. I know what a huge stress that is, and so for those people who are gearing up for that or there, including the people who do the hard work of serving on the MFC.
Oh my God!
Hats are off to all of you. May it go well. Go well. And I'm curious, because it seems like, in my experience, seminarians often come in really passionate about something, as Tom would say, relevant, and then get kind of sucked into this life of hoops to jump and things to prove and things to do. And so last time I was checking around, it seemed like a whole lot of the people in seminary were not envisioning, this isn't about the conference, it's a bigger question, were not envisioning life in the parish as their future. I'm curious, as you prepare and as you talk to other people in seminary, if it seems like a lot of people are thinking about dual careers or community ministry or kind of, and which kinds of those people are most likely to come to this conference?
I don't have a really good sense of where the participants of the conference are in terms of that, but I would say overall, I'm hearing more and more seminarians focusing on a community ministry model. I feel more drawn to the parish ministry, but I do not in any way feel like I'm in the majority or anything like that. I think there's a lot of people considering chaplaincy in those various forms, and community ministry is a really strong pull for a lot of people.
I see a change a-coming. That's what that's all I can really say about it. I don't think a lot of people are thinking about church the same way as it used to be, and I fall very much into that category. Not even community ministry, but just what does ministry look like in the world? In the this whole division between secular and religious is just so uninteresting to me. I don't want to do that. I think theology is incredibly important. And exactly like what Bob was saying at the beginning, with the prison ministry and look what happens when our theology isn't represented in our country, those are the sorts of things I'm looking at. And that, to me, doesn't belong just in a church. So I have no answer for you about what I'm planning on doing. I think I'm fairly representative of that, I guess, like in a way, mm-hmm. a lot of me going around right now, this sort of I don't know what I want to do, but it's bigger than just parish ministry. Not that just parish ministry is not huge, by the way. I think it's so huge that in some ways it takes all of your energy. And so there's a question of how to be in the world and a minister for me.
Oh, I wonder how many seminarians are looking at parish ministry and finding many qualities of it unappetizing because of the way we're doing business as congregations. And when you look at the fact that the shortage of interims and the way transitions work, and I don't think settled ministers want to do 3 years in a church and then move on, but I hear a lot of horror stories.
In my most cynical moments, I sometimes think the best thing about parish ministry is that you go through it and then you get to retire. And then you get to be a minister in the world.
Well, so here's a question I had that I think is actually related about how it feels to be in parish ministry. Is seminary is like this whirling vortex of competing agendas, you know, all these different poles on our attention, and it's easy to have collegiality fall to the side. And Meadville, I think, is at least very intentionally trying to cultivate collegiality, and I think what Seagus is trying to do too is create a North American collegiality, which I think is really important. And I wonder when I go to my cluster meetings and stuff like that, I feel like I'm feeling a different vibe from the older ministers about how they think about how they are together. And I don't know if there's a generational difference in how they think about it.
Describe the difference. What do you mean?
Like, it's just less important to the conversations. And it's maybe because we're like, as a seminary, I'm all bright-eyed and I really want to hear what everybody has to say. And I'm just sopping up all the information. And I don't feel the urgency from my older ministers, my seniors in the profession about being together. But am I just projecting that?
I can tell, and Tom will have an opinion, that really varies district by district and cluster by cluster. Hmm. So there are the Pacific Northwest, where I've never been, so it's all legend, but has always fostered, going back to Peter Rabel, who is always lifted up, as when your colleague asks you for anything, you show up and you do it. And there's certainly ministers, Shay is working for two of them, who live by that ethic. Robin Jan Eller Isaacs, I can't even believe the things they say yes to, because a colleague, you'd never say no to a colleague. Other people see that as much more optional. And actually, I thought you might go the other direction with the generational difference, that there's less of that ethic, that kind of you say yes thing. People are more like, I can't say yes because XYZ and I'm, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I think that goes both ways. I mean, it's really shifted here where I live, because Rob and Jan moved here and they shifted the whole culture. It used to be people didn't show up for ordinations, installations here. It was pathetic. And now, boy, you show up. And so I think it takes leadership and modeling and commitment of the people who are there. For me, it gets more important the longer I'm in ministry, not less.
The old school, you know, of which Rob and Jan are, and me, I hate to admit, the old school, the contradiction among the ministers were the people who were heavily collegial, the Rob and Jan, the people who would do anything, Peter Rabel, a whole set of people that were just sterling examples of it. And on the other end of the spectrum of them were the Lone Rangers, the people who basically said, you know, our job is to be ministers in our parish, and everything else is a distraction. The UUA, the district, the UUMA chapter, all of that's a distraction, and I'll fit it in maybe, right? Maybe. But that, in the end, the people who've had the influence, of course, are the people who show up. And that sets a kind of a model. You know, the downside of that generation, of course, was that everybody was coming in out of their inadequacy about running their parish, you know, because it was like everybody was trying to present themselves as better ministers than they actually are. They were trying to hide their doubts and vulnerabilities. And I think that's going away. People are more willing at this point. And that's partly the difference between, you know, as the baby boomers kind of became more vulnerable over time, they became more, and that was a lot having to do with women baby boomers coming in, you know, bringing your vulnerability to the chapter, bringing your vulnerability to your colleagues. And that's what's rising, it seems, among that group. And that's setting, you know, what the newer folks, you know, I've been in a chapter which the newer folks didn't show up very much. They were like too stressed, too busy, too much. Of course, the demands are so much more heavy. And when you have more women ministers, you know, all of a sudden your chapter is starting to worry about people's childcare arrangements, which of course never used to be a problem for anybody, right? You know, that was always somebody else's deal. So, you know, how to get your chapter.
Right?
What?
Because it was all dudes, right?
It was all dudes, right? You know, so that becomes, you know, that's changing that. I think the whole problem, I mean, one of the reasons why the UUMA set up a committee on collegiality to work specifically on this, on chapter life, on all of these things, equivalent to the center committee, is because this is so important and it's so in flux, and our mechanism, you know, UUMA chapters, doesn't work anymore. It's a broken system.
All right, Tom, you and I are being old geezers. I find myself going, let me join. No, okay. But we're here with some
French people that we can make cynical and weary before their time. So our work will be done. I'm going to mute now.
So I am curious, Shay, how going to that conference affected your life and ministry a couple years ago. What would you say now, looking back?
You know, I think it was actually very transformative to expand my contacts and my seminary experience out beyond Star King, because we can be very insular, like any seminary, and especially out there on the West Coast. So, you know, some of my deepest and most important collegial relationships right now have come from that gathering. And that's just amazing. And then, you know, to add to the conversation we've been having, I think things have changed drastically with social media. It's changed how we interact with each other, how often we interact with each other, and what those relationships are like. And I know that in the past, CGUS has sort of paid attention to that. What is social media, and how can we use it in building these relationships? So that's always been a big aspect of things.
You can't ask for much more than that. Alex, is that what you hope people will say who attend this one?
Absolutely. I hope that I can say that. And I'm really excited about it. I think it'll be really, really good. And I think kind of going back to the sort of showing up versus, I don't know, that question is so interesting to me, because one of the things I think that's been passed down through the generations to us current seminarians is self-care and the idea of burnout, and we're so aware of that. It's all over the place. It is in social media. You know, I go online and half the time it's like, how do we not burn out in 5 years, you know? And so going into a profession knowing that is different than going into it not knowing that. And so sometimes I wonder if what is perceived as like a withholding is actually a reserving energy for the things that we care the most about, because I'm being taught that that's really key. And I maybe this is interesting because what I'm hearing is maybe I'm then missing out on things that I don't know I care a lot about if I'm not showing up. So balance, I don't know.
When you figure that one out, let us all know. I think we could write a bestseller, right?
I've always thought of collegiality as the antidote to burnout, but I understand that lots of people view it as a another time obligation, another energy obligation, and that it's hard to sustain that. If somehow you can get it to the point that it sustains you rather than drains you, then it's really an important part of keeping yourself from burning out.
It's also, I think the parallel is with the, doing this in a Facebook age. I think Facebook takes and gives away, and there's good Facebook experiences and bad, and the UU seminarian salon can be a source of anxiety, but it can also be incredibly helpful too. But I do find actually the more effective collegiality happens in the smaller groups. So I know of a lot of people who have created sort of secret subgroups of seminarians, which is their go-to place for comfort. And Alex is smiling, and Shay, I bet you've seen those too or been part of those. And so it's about making these, whatever the system is, whether it's face-to-face or Facebook, whatever, making it work for us in this crazy setting.
Absolutely. I agree with Tom that you have to figure out how collegiality feeds you. And the ministers that I see who succeed, in, especially in traditional parish settings, two things I would say. One, they love their people. They might not like them, but they love them. And two, they have colleagues. And the ministers that I've seen flame and burn out have not been in relationship that could help them when, for instance, they stopped loving their people. So I think this is a really exciting move that you're making of a face-to-face gathering to meet each other, spend time together, and deepen in, as Bob says, a Facebook age where we do a lot of drive-by connecting. So let's do last words from each of you because we're coming to our end. How about each of our guests start and just say anything you haven't said that you want to say?
I'll go. This has made me really even more excited about Seagus. When you get wrapped up in planning, sometimes you forget that you're planning something you're really excited to attend. So thanks for this today, and thanks for all of your wonderful wisdom.
Yeah, I just want to say it's not too late to register. There's still room available, and we'd love to see you there. If you've been thinking about it and you're not sure, if you have any questions.
Tell folks the website, Eileen.
Yeah, the website is cguus.org. And you can find us on Facebook at CGUUS Chicago 2015. I hope to see you there.
I just want to say a quick thank you. I express real gratitude to all of the planners at Meadville and Evanston who are putting this together, because I know from experience it's a lot of work, and I'm really excited to see you all in a couple weeks, and just thanks for all the work you've done, and looking forward to this great event.
That's a nice thing. Bob, you're kind of neither fish nor fowl. You're a seminarian, but do you have anything you want to say on the way out?
I think it's exciting to me because I think we live in an age where we have an opportunity to look at how Unitarian Universalism is different geographically across the country and not just read about it. And I think Seagus is a great opportunity to see that beyond what we see on Facebook and those rare times where we're face-to-face in seminary.
Reverend Shay, last words?
Just remember that there's somewhere out there, there is a seminarian who wants to go, and the airfare looks too high. So go to one of these pages, and I'm sure there's instructions on how to donate money. And your $50, $25, $10,
$100 or frequent flyer miles,
difference in somebody going and not going. And that person may be someone who is needs this connection a lot, and maybe the person that someone at this summit, at this conference, needs to learn and find out about. So do your part. You may be not be a seminary. You may be an old grizzled hack minister somewhere or a lay leader somewhere. And I think this is a great investment in the future of our movement. So find out how to give them money. It's easy. I did it through PayPal.
Amen to that.
It is easy. Tom, thank you so much for that. And don't be afraid to ask for money.
And yeah,
first lesson you should learn in seminary, because I think is how to ask for money.
Next week we'll have Linda Susan Ulrich talking about going to the White House to talk to the president about bisexuality and an agenda emerging there. So we look forward to that. See you all next time.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.